Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 122 of Season 5 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today to not finish off this week, because we will be back for episodes tomorrow and on Sunday, or at least I will be back. I'll be back with different guests, so I'll be back with my penultimate guest and my final guest each time. You know, the same people that have been helping me finish off each season. So you can come back tomorrow and Sunday for those episodes. But to finish off the final week of a, I guess, regular guest, which is a great guest also, is is Matthew Simpson of Awesome Friday. And, you know, it's Friday, so that works well.
It does work out well.
Yeah. Welcome back, Matthew.
It's been a pleasure to be here all week. Yeah. I've been really enjoying it.
Yes. I've been having a lot of fun too, and I'm glad that you were able to join me for this.
Yeah.
So minute 122 begins with or continues the visual effects credits for ILM and ends with the list of engineers. Basically what we've been dealing with for the last basically all week is we've had all the credits. You know, and we ended things yesterday with some of the ILM people, and today we're continuing with that, and you get to see there's just so many people that were working on ILM on this section of the film, which to me is just amazing. You know, that on a film like this they would have so many people dealing with everything. But hey, why not? You know, it needs to be done, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to count how many there are, and I just lost track at like 25.
Yeah, there's a lot.
That's not even halfway there.
Again, when I was how many years ago was this? This was probably 27 years ago. I was working in a high tech company where they were, you know, it was back in the days before the internet really went viral, I guess you can say. And, you know, we were creating educational software on CDs, and I was working in the QA department. And I remember that, you know, we would go through the credits and, you know, look for errors and stuff like that, you know, along with the rest of the CD. I mean, there were encyclopedias that were on CDs, and some of them were just, you know, graphic educational tools and stuff like that. And I remember the fact that basically they told us at the beginning that anyone who has any connection to this particular product gets their name in the credits. You know, it doesn't matter how much work you actually do on it. You know, if part of your job is somehow connected to it, so therefore it goes on. Again, I'm not saying that to belittle any of the people that are listed in the credits, but my point is that, you know, someone might have worked, you know, a few hours on the movie doing something that's not directly connected to the movie, and therefore they should be credited. That's what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you lost count at 25, so let's say there are 35 people, you know, from ILM that are working on this. You know, the question is, were all 35 of them, you know, constantly working on Die Hard 2 for whatever number of months, or were they all working on multiple projects at the same time and it just happens to be, oh, I need a little help with this, so why don't you come and help me? Oh, okay. Now you'll be in the credits for what you're doing and stuff like that. Or someone was sick one day and someone else took over, you know, things like that. So yeah, it's nice to see. I mean, as we talked about, I think it was yesterday, you know, there are people who are uncredited on movies also, which, you know, which thanks to IMDb, we find out that now they should be credited there.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's only right. Like if you do work, you should get credit for your work.
Yeah, of course. I completely agree with you. You know, there's no reason why someone shouldn't. I mean, again, going back to the story that I was telling before, when I was working in this software company, so, you know, I was even told that the fact that my name wasn't listed in the credits was considered a bug and that I needed to tell them and get it changed. You know, that type. So.
I mean, that's kind of. It's kind of great when they, you know, when they remember to take that level of care. So
yeah, exactly. That's true. And again, this was 27 years ago when, you know, now everything's on the internet and most people are not credited. So, you know, mm-hmm. there there are CVs of educational software out there, probably one or two that have my name in the credits, and that's it. But I have more credits on IMDb, so that's fine. come on, as of today, I have over 600 credits, for all the episodes that I've done. So there you
Oh,
go.
nice.
It's like one movie credit, but within that movie, within the podcast. So, we are up to how many episodes are we up to at this point? We're up to 600 and we're probably close to 620, something like that at this point. So yeah, we finish with the ILM credits, and then we have a short section for the second unit, which I found very interesting that there are only seven people in the second unit, which has an aerial coordinator and a script supervisor, and you have the A camera operator and the B camera operator, the production manager, the DP, and the first assistant director. So I don't know what type of work they actually did in the movie. The fact that they have an aerial coordinator. Do you think an aerial coordinator is someone who coordinates shots that are being taken from like a helicopter?
Probably. That
Or
sounds.
is it the person, or is it a person who books the flights?
I feel it's got to be the first, right? Because the second would be called like travel
No,
coordinator.
it is. Yeah, I know. And Jim Herbert is mentioned here, and I find it really interesting because at the beginning, he was listed as the production manager, line producer, and there it was James Herbert, and here it's Jim Herbert.
I mean, is this
So
another family
you,
business thing, or is it the same
no,
guy?
I actually think it's the same person. I think it's the same person, which I find really interesting that he's listed twice here. That's the question.
Wonder.
I don't know.
James.
I mean, okay, in IMDb, is listed twice on the page of the movie. But my assumption is it's the exact same person. Yes, it links to the same person, but see, that's what's even stranger. That in one place is listed as James and one place is listed as Jim in the same movie.
Wonder if maybe he did a thing like where he gets credited one way for one type of job and one way for another or something.
You're saying when he's a production manager, he's Jim, and when he's the that would be interesting.
Maybe, I don't know.
No, I don't think I no, it's it that's a great idea. He is only listed in two places as the unit production manager, and that's on two Rennie Harlan films, Die Hard 2 and The Adventures of Ford Fairlane. All the others, he is the unit production manager. So yeah.
Well, then I have no idea.
Yeah, no, neither do I, but I find that very fascinating that he would have different named credits for the same type of on the same movie.
I mean, it could be something as simple as the person doing the credits being like, "Who did this job? Was it Jim? I think it was Jim. Like, they just know him as Jim, and they threw the name in there."
That's right. And then someone looked on the screen afterwards and like, oh crap.
Maybe probably.
They're like, yeah, most people aren't gonna be looking at the credits anyway, so no one will notice,
Probably the same guy who misspelled Rush Thorpe's name.
That's right. And today we're gonna get into another error in the
Oh,
credits.
good.
So we're gonna get there soon. And so yeah, a after this it goes back to the cast. So and what's interesting is it doesn't list them. Usually in movies in the credits you see that it'll once again say cast, as a header. Here there's no header, and then it'll just go through the various actors here. I find the order quite interesting the way that they do it, because obviously Bruce Willis is going to be first. There's John McClane, but then Bonnie Bedelia gets second credit, even though she is not predominantly featured in this movie. She's a big part of the movie. I'm not belittling that, but there are, you'd think that there would be other characters that would come before her. And then you have William Atherton as Thornburg. And then Reginald Vell Johnson gets the fourth credit as Al Powell, and he has literally you know, he's in 2 minutes of this movie.
I'd be willing to bet it has to do with the fact that they're all returning casts, right? Like they,
I think that's part of it, but I think it also has to do with the fact that Reginald L. Johnson at this point was already starting to be a big name because he was on Family Matters at this point. Mm-hmm. So it was also, you know, giving him the credit that is due. Sometimes, you know, in movies you'll see that someone has a higher credit because name recognition as opposed to the amount of work they do in that particular movie itself.
Yeah, or they're so hot right now or something.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then the next credit is Franco Nero as Esperanza, which to me is really baffling that he comes before William Sadler as Stewart, because Stewart's so the question here is who's the main bad guy here? Is the main bad guy supposed to be Esperanza or Stewart?
I mean, the antagonist of the plot is definitely Colonel Stewart. But I'd be willing to bet willing to bet in this case that it's just that at that point Franco Nero was probably a much bigger name.
Oh, for sure. There's no question about that. Yeah. But you'd think that you would put the main bad guy first.
I mean,
as opposed to.
Yeah, I mean, yes. On the one hand, on the other, this is an area where I'm just resigned to like the business dealings of Hollywood. Hollywood is a business, right? So, in some cases, this is just going to boil down to who is a better agent. As well, because the order of credits and who appears when on posters and such is often determined ahead of time. Kind of like how I think a really good example of that is that Arnold Schwarzenegger has first billing on Batman and Robin, even though he's not Batman or Robin. he's the only like Correct. Above the title okay. name. Everyone else, it's like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Batman and Robin starring George Clooney. Like it's really weird, right?
Right.
It's just the way the business dealings of it worked out.
That's true. I mean, my favorite, credits story is Towering Inferno,
mm-hmm.
you know, where you basically had Paul Newman and Steve McQueen, who were both, they both wanted top billing, and they had to make a deal as to that, you know, which of them would get top billing where. And there was also, they like counted the number of words each of them had in their dialogue to make sure that it was even and stuff like that. I mean, that to me, that's just completely crazy.
Yeah.
To go that far.
And I wonder how much of that comes from the performers themselves and how much of it comes from, like, their agents who are tasked with getting the most money.
Right.
But either way, it is definitely a, like, kind of a bonkers story when you think about it.
Yeah, for sure. They're all bonkers stories. I mean, a friend of the show, Dana Nachman, who was on last season, and the previous seasons also, you know, she herself is a director. So we talked about the fact of, you know, the whole idea of negotiation as to where you're listed in the credits, you know, and whether you have your own credit on the screen or whether you have to share it, you know, as part of the credit roll and stuff like that. So, you know, that was a very fascinating conversation. I think we had that conversation during Plane, Trains, and Automobiles during the credit scene. I'm mm-hmm. pretty sure she was on back then. And, you know, she basically said that in each person's contract, it already states where you will be located when you get to the, when you go through the credits,
mm-hmm.
you know, and how your credit will work and stuff like that. So, you know, anyone interested in finding that out can go back to Plane, Trains, and Automobiles, which was season 2, and look up episodes either 88 or 89, where Dana was my guest, where we talked about all that stuff. So you can go back and check that out if you're interested.
I kind of am, so I'm like, I think I remember listening to that one, but I will have to go back and listen again.
There you go. And then, so after Stewart, we have the credit for Grant, you know, John Amos, followed by Lorenzo, Dennis Franz, Barnes, Art Evans, Trudeau, Fred Dalton Thompson, Marvin, played by Tom Bauer. And then we get to a mistake. Then we get Sheila McCarthy. Do you remember what her name is in the movie? Don't look at the credits because they're wrong.
It's Sam something, right?
Sam Coleman. Yeah. Okay. And in the credits, she is listed as Sam Copeland.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so if someone was not paying attention here.
Yep.
which always makes me laugh when they do things like this. You know, you'd think that they would be paying a little bit more attention.
Mean, you'd think, but they're just people, so it happens. I'm just glad. I always get
Sure.
heartened when Sheila McCarthy shows up in this film because I actually really like her as an actress. She's a sort of a long-standing Canadian character actor. I enjoy her every time she shows up and stuff, and this is no
Okay,
exception.
yeah, I mean, when I think of her, this is the movie where, you know, I think of. You know, anytime I see her, anything that's where it is. Now, in all fairness, one of the probably reasons why her name is listed as Copeland here is because in the script, her character's name is Copeland.
That makes sense.
But she's actually only listed twice in the script. As Copeland, because all the rest of the time it just says Sam.
Right. That makes sense.
But you know, they changed it at some point. So maybe, you know, usually from what I understand, and I could be wrong, they do the credits at the end. You know, when they're done, when they're putting everything together at the end of the movie, that's when they put the credits in. You know, or maybe it's something that they do as the movie goes on. I don't know.
Or maybe like someone was handed the script and went through, what do you call that game, broken
The
telephone?
characters in the
Yeah, the
script.
characters in the script, and someone else lists them out, and then that list is given to the credits person, and then nobody double
Right.
checks, or maybe they do check, but it's too late, and
Right.
yeah.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. And then we get a list that we get Garber listed once again. And then it jumps to the terrorists. And first of all, anyone who's listened to the last 121 episodes, it's been very difficult for me referring to them as terrorists, because you know I think of the guys in Die Hard as terrorists. The guys in Die Hard 2, I don't know what to call them, but I don't think terrorist is the right word. You know, that's the thing.
Well, there's
Because
certainly.
usually you think of terrorists as freedom fighters, as people who have political motives with what they're doing, you know, in order to overtake something. They're mercenaries here. You know, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, I think just bad guys is probably fine too.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
mean,
They're
they do
so I
technically
have
have like
trouble
a
thinking of them
political,
as
they technically have a political motive that William Sadler outlines for about 5 seconds near the start of the movie, but isn't it really just that like we like General Esperanza and we want him to be free is pretty much the whole thing, right? Like
more or less, yeah.
we buy into America meddling in foreign politics is
Right.
we're the hardliner version of a of 80s American foreign policy.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. I guess at the end of the day it doesn't
That
really
sounds
matter.
fair.
They're just the bad guys, they're just the bad
That's right.
guys.
That's right. And then it goes through the list of all of them. You know, we've talked about each of them as they've shown up and as they've died. And then we get a list of the eight members of Blue Light Team that are listed here. Most of them, based on what I checked, are basically stuntmen. You know, they're not really. I mean, sorry, let's go back a second. The terrorists, there were 10 of them. So you had 10 plus Garber plus Stewart. So there were a dozen of them. And here on Blue Light, you only have eight guys. But if we counted through the course of the movie, there were also 12. So where do we get the others? If you continue after having these eight guys on Blue Light, then we have Corporal Telford, Sergeant, Second Sergeant, and then Soldier. Okay, so we do get a total of 12. Corporal Telford, as I mentioned numerous times, is played by Patrick O'Neill, who is the son of Ryan O'Neill, and he is the husband of Rebecca De Mornay. And not at the time that he made this movie, but as of now, you know, they got married like 10 years after this movie came out. Now, the one that what really jumps out at me here is why do they need to have one of them listed as soldier? You know, you have eight blue light guys, then you have three guys that are sort of named. Okay, you have corporal and then sergeant and then second sergeant, and then you just have soldier.
I wonder if it's, and I'd have to go back and actually, I mean, I did watch this day before yesterday, but I'd have to go back and watch more closely in the scenes, but perhaps he has a line and the others don't, would be my guess.
It could be. That could be. It's true. And so he's played by Anthony Droz, who only has two IMDb credits. One is here, and the other one is he does stunt work in Lethal Weapon 4.
Yeah, that tracks.
Which comes out a few years after this movie. You know, so he must have been a stuntman. Then we get the list of some of the people on the planes. So we have the Northeast plane. So we have the pilot, co-pilot, navigator, the stewardesses, and then the old woman, you know, the woman sitting next to to Holly on the plane.
The taser woman.
Again, that's right, the taser woman. We've already talked about all these people as they came up throughout the course of the movie. Then we have the Windsor plane, which has six people on it, pilot, co-pilot, navigator, two stewardesses, and passenger, who we tried to figure out who Alan Berger was back at the time, and were unable to figure out who it was, followed by the three people on Farm Military 1. You have the pilot, co-pilot, and the young corporal. And then we have WNTW. You have the cameraman, the sound man, and the chopper pilot. Now, do you see the name of the sound man?
Yes, that's Mr. Katz, right? Yeah, David Katz.
That's right, David Katz. So yesterday, I sort of mentioned the fact that you know, that there is the, you know, that we're going to circle back around to the name David Katz. So I just find it really strange that, you know, I'm assuming David Katz is a relatively common name.
When you mentioned this before, I went looking a little bit. So I think I found what you're talking about. And I'm guessing it's just a super common name.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I thought my first thought when I saw it was that there are actually, you know, it's the part of a guy who's on the crew is also, you know, in the cast, because his credit in the crew is the video playback operator. And I said, oh, that would be really cool just to have him, you know, standing in as the sound man.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to figure out, because on IMDb, he is David Katz number one. And, you know, he played Arafat in The Naked Gun.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in both Die Hards as a sound man, in Die Hard 1 and Die Hard 2. You know, he has a total of seven credits as an actor. And then you have David Katz number six, who is basically in the camera department and visual effects and stuff like that. So, you know, it is possible that it is the same person. It's also possible that it's not. You know, there's really no way of us being able to figure this out without, you know, David Katz coming and telling us that, oh, I'm the same person, or we are completely different people.
Yeah, I mean, we'd have to make
David Katz, if you are listening, either of you, or you, if it's only one of you, please let us know.
Yeah,
I'm curious to know.
I'm inclined to think that it must be
inquiring minds want to know.
That's
right. No, I'm assuming also, but you know, inquiring minds want to know.
Maybe we could track him down and get you like a bonus episode of the podcast. Talk to one of the David Katz.
There you go. If you guys, if you're listening, let me get in touch, and I will gladly, I will gladly add an episode for that, for sure. Then we get credits for the people at WZDC, which I find really interesting. We have three newscasters from WZDC, even though I think we only, I'm assuming we saw all three, but it seemed as if we had only seen two, but maybe one of them was, I think, at the beginning.
Yeah.
When they were showing, when he was talking about Esperanza, you know, being taken out of Valverde. I think that's the guy they're talking about there.
Yeah, because the only one I clearly remember is Dominique Jennings is the one that
yes
gets called into and later in the movie.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. That is right. And then we get 12 engineers. Okay, do you know who these engineers are? Any idea?
I'm assuming they're all the team of engineers that are like working around the fixing the problems in the airport as they come up, but I'm not 100% sure though.
Okay, so these are, I mean, you're right. These are the guys in the control tower that most of them have little lines, you know, like one of them says, "Oh yeah, and where are we gonna get that? We're gonna, yeah, why don't we just run down to Radio Shack and get that?" And one of them says, "You know, let's use big lights."
Yeah, they're
And before
basically,
Barnes says, "Oh, you mean like Batman?"
yeah, I was gonna say
They're basically comic relief.
they're basically like Barnes is, it's Barnes, right? Is the lead engineer guy. They're basically his team, as it were.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, none of them really jumped out at me as you know, that I wanted to check out a little bit more about them, because they don't differentiate them at all in the movie. You know, it's just all of them sitting there talking and, you know, having these discussions and throwing things out here and there and stuff like that.
They seem like they're probably all. I'm just sort of trying to click through a little bit on some of them right now, but it seems like they're mostly all just sort of like working middle class actors for the most part.
That's right. They're background guys,
Yeah.
and that's how this minute ends. So, did you have anything else you want to talk about this minute?
No, that's pretty much it. That doesn't really. I mean, I will say just to shout out, because we would have gone past when we talked about the Windsor plane, that, the most important person in Star Trek
Cole Meaney.
history, Colm Meaney, is the pilot of the plane that crashes, or I should say
Yes.
that is crashed, with a
Correct.
lovely received pronunciation British accent instead of his normal Irish brogue. But yeah, he would go on to join Star Trek and become the most important person in Starfleet history. So that's always
He
nice.
was in Star Trek. He was in Star Trek at this point. In 1990, he was already in Star
Yeah,
Trek.
he was already in Next Generation, but he really didn't become like the character until he switched to DS9, when he became
Right.
like a lead cast member and are arguably the most important person in Starfleet history.
Okay, why do you think he's the most important person in Starfleet history?
He becomes basically like Scotty of the 90s Star Trek generation. He's the most important engineer. And he's one of the only like non-commissioned officers who's a regular part in any show. And he's responsible for lots of stuff to do with the Dominion War, and he's often the guy who comes up with solutions, technical solutions to the big problems that they face throughout the 90s of Trek. Yeah.
Okay. Right. I mean, as an actor, he also, I mentioned this back when before his plane was crashed, that he's the only actor to appear in 14 different seasons of Star Trek,
Yeah, he's just appeared in the
because he
most of
was,
it as well.
that's right. And he also, is only one of four actors to appear in the finale of two different, Star Trek, series, because he was in, Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. And there was something else that he was there was something that he is like the top guy of something.
Probably like number, not just seasons, but it's probably like number of episodes. He's probably up there as well.
Ah, there you go. He's one of only three actors to appear in over 200 episodes of Star Trek.
Yeah.
And the other two are Patrick Stewart and Michael Dorn.
Yeah, which makes sense because they would have appeared on. Well, Dorn was on famously three shows now, and same with Patrick Stewart. And Stewart appeared in. I think he appeared in Deep Space. He's definitely on Deep Space Nine. I can't remember if he shows up in Voyager off the top of my head, but they all get around, is what I'm trying to say.
Yes, for sure. Okay, so every Friday we have a segment called "Where Are They Up To This Weekend?" where basically I try to test my guests' memory of some of their favorite movies. Okay, so we've now hit the 122 minute mark of this movie, and so you know, I asked Matthew before we recorded to give me the list of his three favorite movies, and he's going to tell us where each of these movies is up to at the 122 minute mark. Okay, so the first one we're going to go with is Airplane. What is going on in the movie Airplane at the 2 hour and 2 minute mark? And don't look this up. It's supposed to be off the top of your head.
So airplane, nothing, because I think it's only about 90 minutes.
That's right. Okay,
Which, so that's an easy one.
I was waiting for that answer.
Yeah. In fact,
I was waiting for that answer.
I think it's
Yes.
less than 90. I
Airplane
think
is,
it's like
that's
88 or
right.
something.
Airplane is 87 minutes and 42 seconds.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So yeah, Airplane is long done. Airplane ended 35 minutes ago. We've already started Airplane 2 at this point, I guess you can say.
Or, you
Okay,
know,
now we're gonna go to.
or a different, better movie.
Okay, could be. All right, the next one we're gonna go to is King Kong, the 1933 version. So what is going on at the 2 hours and 2 minute mark of King Kong?
If memory serves, that'd be right around the end, wouldn't it? Like, isn't that movie about like 2 hours and it's just over 2 hours, isn't it?
Nope, that is 1 hour and 44 minutes.
Oh, so it's
So
over
that
two.
ended also. That also ended.
Yeah.
What can you do? That's what happens at this point, And the final movie, Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan, which we mentioned earlier in the week, because we were talking about James Horner. What is going on in Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan at the 2 hour and 2 minute mark?
I think it's also over, isn't it? Isn't it? It's under 2 hours,
Yes.
so it's also over. Yeah.
That's right. It's 1 hour and 53 minutes, so it ended 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, all three of the movies that you've chosen don't appear on this list. So, I decided to maybe test. I know you're a big Star Trek fan, so how many Star Trek movies are over 2 hours? I'm not going to ask you to tell me what is going on specifically in each of them. Okay, what we can do is we can just go one by one, and you'll tell me whether you think they're over 2 hours or not. All right. So, Star Trek: The Motion Picture.
It's over
What do you
two
think?
hours, isn't it? Isn't
That's
it?
right. It's 2 hours and 12 minutes.
Yeah.
Yes, 2 hours and 12 minutes.
Yeah, Star Trek
Okay. Star Trek
Two
Two,
is
the
under. Yeah.
under. Okay. Star Trek Three.
Star Trek Three, I think, is also under. Isn't
That's
it?
right. It's 1 hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. Star Trek Four. The Voyage
I'm
Home.
gonna say that it's just under.
Nope, Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home is 2 hours and 2 minutes. It actually ends now,
Oh, it's, yes,
at
be
this exact minute.
the credits would be just finishing, right?
That's right. Okay, Star Trek V.
Star Trek 5 is a tough one. I'm gonna say that it's over because it definitely feels like it would be over 2 hours. Like, it feels long, so I'm gonna say it's still going.
It feels long, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's 1 hour and 46 minutes. So it ended. Almost 20 minutes ago.
Right. But it would have felt like it,
Okay.
when watching it would feel like it was still going because
For sure. For sure. I agree with you on that one. Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country.
Star Trek Six, I'm gonna say, is just ending. Like, that's about a, it's probably like an hour and 50 something, right? Like, it's just ended.
It's exactly 1 hour and 50.
Yeah.
So it ended 12 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's get into the next generation movies. So, Star Trek Generation, what do you think?
It's under 2 hours, right?
It's slightly under 2 hours. It ended 4 minutes ago.
Yeah.
It's 1 hour and 58 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, First Contact.
That's also under 2 hours, I think.
That's right, 1 hour and 51 minutes. Insurrection.
Insurrection is a week long, so it's still going. We're still on the planet because that movie never ends because it's so slow. But in real life, it's probably under. I haven't actually watched that one in forever, but it's probably under.
It's 1 hour and 43 minutes.
Yeah.
Nemesis.
Nemesis is over.
Nemesis is 1 hour and 56 minutes, and that ended. Okay. All right. Now we'll get into the reboot. The Kel what's known as the Kelvin timeline
Yeah.
films. So, all right, first one, Star Trek.
Star Trek 2009 is under 2 hours, I believe.
It is 2 hours and 7 minutes. We have another 5 minutes to go.
Oh, maybe that's just because it's such a fast-paced and fun movie. See, it's sort of the opposite of
Okay.
Five and Insurrection.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Into Darkness.
That's over 2 hours, I believe, right?
That's right. 2 hours and 12 minutes.
So it's got like 10 to go.
And that's right. And the final one is Star Trek Beyond.
That's about 2 hours,
What do you
right?
think? That is 2 hours and 2 minutes. Again, we
Yeah.
just finished it.
Yeah,
So yeah.
that one is, I think, of the three, I maybe it's controversial among Star Trek fans, but I think Beyond is the best of the three rebooted ones.
Interesting. Okay.
Certainly in.
I actually think the first one's the best, but again, I enjoy all three.
Yeah. I don't like Into Darkness very much. But I think to me, I think the Beyond gets the vibe correct in a way that the other two don't.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Now, just off the top of your head, if you were to watch all 13 Star Trek movies one after the other, how long do you think it would take you to watch it now that we just went through the whole thing?
It's like 20, it's basically 26 hours or probably like 25
it's,
hours.
But it's very good. It's 25 hours and 17 minutes. That's, yeah. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's very impressive.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
And I've never done that in like one sitting, but I've definitely done it like over the course of a week before.
Oh, wow.
Like I've watched like one
a day. I don't think I've ever done it. I've split them up. I've done like all of the original series at one time, you know, in one day, all of the Next Generation in one day, and all of the, you know, and the three reboot ones also, which upset me that they never, you know, made more of those, but whatever.
Well, that's a separate issue. They're still trying, but I'm not going to hold my breath at this point, but
exactly.
I think the most,
I agree with you on that.
I think the most recent time where I watched, like very purposely watched all of them. I was working at a job and I watched them like in 1 hour chunks on my lunch break. So, it was basically like cool. Five, you know, for
a whole month,
basically a month. I watched an hour at a time every day. Yeah.
All right. That's cool. That's very cool. All right. So Matthew, thank you very much for joining me this week. I had a blast. I hope you did too.
Oh, I very much did. I hope
you enjoyed yourself.
Very much enjoyed the week. And, in diving into, diving into all these credits has been a lot of fun actually. So thanks for having me on. It's been great.
I appreciate it. And hopefully when we, you know, in two seasons from now, when you're back for Die Hard with a Vengeance, you'll have some action scenes also this time.
I mean, I hope so.
I will do my best.
Die Hard 3 is my favorite of the three movies, so I look forward to whenever that happens.
Okay, that's great. All right, do you want to once again tell people where they can find Matthew Simpson?
Yeah, like I said, the easiest way is to just go to my personal website, which is stretched.ca. You can find links to all my recent work there. All my podcast appearances, guest appearances, and recent writing. You can also find me on the socials. You can find me at SmathUAF on Twitter and Instagram, and at Smathew on Blue Sky. And last but not least, you can find my weekly movie review podcast, Awesome Friday Podcast, on whatever podcast platform is your platform of choice.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter, or you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. Now, just a reminder to everybody, we have not finished with episodes this week. I will be back for the penultimate episode tomorrow. And on Sunday, I will be back for the finale episode of this season. And then come back on Monday to find out what's going to be season 6 of Movie Rob Minute. Matthew, thank you for joining me.
Oh, thanks again.
And I'll be back to talk more about this movie tomorrow. Until then, though, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and